Good afternoon. My name is Charles Willman, registration number 6781. Also present today is my client, Mr. Locklear, who was a respondent in the underlying action. The issues in these cases are, the issue in this case, and I think it's only one issue, it's a fairly simple issue, is whether or not there was consent given to a marriage. This is the issue, as you know, is whether or not a common law marriage existed. Judge Nichols, the trial court, found that there was a common law marriage, but she made a specific finding in the event that it ended up here in front of this panel, that if it got up, that if Mr. Locklear had been asked if he wanted to be married, he would have said, no, I do not want to be married. She would not find that Mrs. Locklear, or Mrs. Johnson, said that she didn't ask whether he would be married or not because she knew he would say no. So with that fundamental finding of evidence, when you look at the case of Lucero, which is still the fundamental case in common law marriage, you don't get to the other factors because you don't have the consent. Marriage, as you all know, is a civil contract. Marriage is a being in the mind between the two parties to be married with the intent to be married. Lucero and Taylor and the other lightning cases that have been cited by both parties have said basically in common law marriage, which is recognized in Colorado, one of the few states as you know that recognizes this, Lucero has indicated they have two things. One, the intent or the consent to be married. And then two, the cohabitation, the holding yourself out in the community as being married. Most of the cases that have been cited in this matter have been cases in which we got to the factors because there was an issue whether there was consent or not consent. And Lucero, another case of it, said you can imply consent by a number of factors, which were cited by both by the petitioner's counsel in his brief. But it's my position to you that you don't get to those factors because the trial court made a fundamental statement as a matter of fact that Mr. Locklear would not consent to the marriage.
So this case is different than the other cases that were cited because this is not a case just where the court said Mr. Locklear says he would have said no. That would be different because then it's a credibility contest and we'd have to look at that. Your argument, if I understand it, is the court here found, essentially, he didn't consent. So we're bound by that if it's supported by the evidence unless the other side contradicts that. Am I right?
That is correct. Essentially, the court did not say, I can't determine whether or not Mr. Locklear made a consent, or he says he didn't make a consent, and therefore we got to look at all these factors. She said, I want the Court of Appeals to know, if this gets up on appeal, that had Mr. Locklear been asked if he wanted to be married, he would have said no. And you get back to basically fundamental contract law. How do you form a contract if you don't have a meeting of the minds? And meeting of the mind would be, I want to be married.
Mr. Will, so then your position is it's not error to consider the other factors in figuring out the credibility of a statement, I do not want to be married, but once that determination is made, that's the end of the story.
That's correct. You'll get to the other factors to determine that credibility, because that's what Lucero and the other cases have been cited by both parties talk about, is if, I think the word of Lucero, if I remember correctly, says something to the fact that if there is a denial of there being a consent, then there is a determination of that. This is the way I read those other cases anyway. There's a determination of that factor. Then you look at these other factors. And it's our position in this case, you don't get to those other factors simply because the court said at the outset, he did not consent to be married. He would not have been married had he been asked. And it would be no different than if I went to a used car dealer and said, I want to buy the Chevy. And they said, well, we'll sell it to you for $300. And I said, no, I won't buy it. We don't have a contract. We don't have the meeting of the minds necessary to form the contract. And Lucero and Taylor cited in the briefs, both of those have indicated that it is a civil contract. That's what common law marriage is. And I think it's particularly important as we get into modern era. I mean, Lucero was decided back in 1988. And what's going on in modern society is more and more people are living together. These can be critical issues I think you're going to be faced with more and more is did their consent. And if somebody says and puts it in writing, or in this case made it so clear that the trial court made the finding there is no consent, then there is no marriage. And you can't have a common law marriage because you don't meet that first of the two criteria for common law marriage in the state of Colorado. That's really all I have to say.
Well, I've got another question before you sit down. On the second issue that you raise, which I think is the question of if you win this argument, that you should get a refund of the amounts paid per the temporary orders. And I will tell you that it has some surface appeal, but I'm not sure it's that simple. As you know, I'm sure, temporary orders are considered final, and you're required to appeal immediately. And so I'm curious, why don't we have a problem here? I guess my question is, do we have jurisdiction to hear the issue? I understand there was this issue turned up later about whether you're common law married or not. But it just seems to me there's a potential problem here because the temporary orders weren't appealed right away.
And the reason it wasn't appealed is I did research the issue, and I didn't come prepared with the case law on that, but I think it's, I apologize, I can't remember the case that talks about temporary orders are appealable, and they're considered to be a final judgment. In this case, the difference is you're not talking about how much child support, how much maintenance, or whether somebody has the custody or parental responsibility of the children. You're talking about a judgment issue, is or is there not. It's sort of like a partial summary judgment, so there isn't a final judgment. I think it's 57, I apologize, I'm going from memory on the rules, but whatever the rule is, it says final judgments. There isn't a final judgment on that issue.
But there's a determination as to property distribution and as to attorney fees as part of temporary orders. Why wasn't that something that had to be challenged at that time?
Well, because again, it wasn't part of the final orders. I would have had to challenge the common law marriage at that point. I didn't believe that you could do that under the law because it was not a final judgment. It appears to me that the finding that there's a marriage is not a final judgment. And unless that's certified as a final judgment, which it was not in this case, neither side sought that, it isn't there. And I guess my view is if it is a final judgment, then if the court doesn't have jurisdiction, there's not a marriage, and the court doesn't have jurisdiction to do that, then the court has to dismiss it. And the attempt I made was to have only a hearing on the issue of whether or not there was a common law marriage, and the judge tied that in together with temporary orders. And I don't believe that issue is waived by not appealing those particular temporary orders. That the matter of fact, if there's no jurisdiction because there is no marriage.
But the court still had jurisdiction because that was within the scope of its statutory and constitutional authority, didn't it?
It doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction because under 1410.101, it's sequence. The Uniform Dissolution of Marriage Act, under that act, then if there's no marriage, then none of those provisions of that act apply.
But that doesn't retroactively render all the orders void, does it?
Well, I think it's void ab initio because exactly, if you don't have a marriage, if I were in a civil partnership and came before you say, well, you ought to give me temporary orders under 1410.101, I'm pretty sure you'd be telling me that I would not be able to do that because the court doesn't have jurisdiction under 1410.101 to give me any relief.
Well, does a court have jurisdiction to determine whether or not there is a marriage?
Yes.
All right. So if the court happens to be wrong, maybe it doesn't have authority to issue orders that would pertain to a marriage, but is that a jurisdiction question?
I believe it is. I believe it's a subject matter jurisdiction because the only jurisdiction under temporary orders arises under 1410.101. And if there is none, which means there's a marriage for the court to dissolve. If there isn't, then there is no marital property. I mean, one of the things that the court gave was $500 in a property payment. I forgot how the court characterized the wording of it, but it was a property settlement, which I certainly should even do that, but I chose to challenge this just on the issue because I think if it doesn't have underlying subject matter jurisdiction, because there is no marriage, then there is no way for the court to be able to issue any kind of orders. And these are both orders under, one was under 108 for the $5,000, and the other was under section 119 for the issue of temporary attorney's fees. And if there is no marriage, then you can't get to attorney fees, any of those issues. Attorney fees is a good example. Only a couple of ways you can get attorney's fees in the state of Colorado. One is by statute, or two is by contract. Well, in this case, the only statute that supports it is a statute arising from the status of the marriage. And if there is no marriage, there is no basis for giving that award.
So your argument here is, in terms of just our appellate jurisdiction, that you were entitled to wait, you didn't have to appeal the temporary orders when they were entered, because at all times you had raised the common law marriage issue. And therefore, and so that was preserved, and you had a right to wait for the court to resolve that, to appeal the temporary orders. And that distinguishes this case from other cases dealing with temporary orders that have to be appealed immediately.
That's correct.
It was because you tied the temporary orders to the common law marriage issue that you were entitled to wait. You didn't have to appeal the temporary orders right away.
That's correct, because it would be no different than is the court's decree of dissolution of marriage in the property division there. If there is no marriage, then there can be no proper division of marital property. Whether it's temporary or permanent, the court doesn't have subject matter jurisdiction to enter orders under 1410.101 in sequence. Okay? Any other questions? Not, I'll reserve any time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Stanley M. Morris from Cortez. My registration number is 157. Obviously, I have a different point of view, and the common law marriage of Danny Preston Locklear and Edith Dell Johnson existed from 1992 until May of 2011, when the dissolution order entered.
What do we do with the court's finding, though?
Pardon?
What do we do with the court's finding that he never intended to be remarried?
I don't believe that court finding is, as counsel describes it, in fact, a finding. It is part of a discussion that the court is going on. But I think that might be answered by People v. Lucero that the Supreme Court handed down in 1987, which clarifies the ruling of the Lucero case, which counsel cited. And there, the court said, and I'm quoting, "The party's understanding may be only tacitly expressed, and difficulty of proof is relatively apparent. We have recognized that agreement may not have been in words." And that's so the fact that Danny Locklear stated, excuse me, my asthma is acting up. The fact that Danny Locklear stated that, or the court in a discussion said he would not have been married, is counteracted by his actions throughout the entire relationship of 19 years.
Mr. Morris, I guess I'm not sure what you're referring to when you say it was in the context of a discussion, and maybe you can help me out. I'm looking at the temporary orders, which begin, "Being fully advised, the court makes the following findings." And in paragraph 3, the court finds, "Respondent did not want to remarry petitioner. Had the parties discussed the matter, respondent would have said he did not want to remarry." I can understand if in the context of an oral argument there's a discussion, that's a finding, it seems to me, but tell me why that's wrong.
Oh, well, I think in the final orders that were issued in May, I think that's counteracted and brought to fruition, and with a notation that while the court was handing down its final ruling, it was just part of a generalized discussion that the court said that there would not be, he did not want to be married, but all of his actions and all of his representations over the years were that of someone who was married. Now, I think the temporary orders fall in the face of the court's finding that there was a marriage in its final order beginning in 2002.
Oh, and if I can interrupt you again, Mr. Morris.
Excuse me.
And I apologize. In 1992, I think you meant to say.
Well, I'm saying it started in 1992.
Right.
The court found that there was a marriage from 2002 until the entry of the order in 2011.
And what I was going to ask you, I'm not seeing what you're referring to in the final orders, the decree and permanent orders. The court certainly says in the final orders that it referred back. It previously found that there was a common law marriage. That's all I can remember. If there's something else, I'd be curious. But it seems to me... that was it?
That's what I'm hanging my hat on.
All right.
Judge Gabriel.
I appreciate that, sir. So let me ask you, it seems to me, or at least it's an arguable read on what the court did, was the court said, you know, I find Mr. Locklear would have denied marriage. He didn't want to be married. But then I look at all this, the indicia to the world, and I think there's marriage. I think that's, you're kind of, the court seems to be hanging its hat on the second, but that doesn't address Mr. Roman's argument that you never get to the second once you haven't satisfied the first. Can you address that?
I think, we come back to Lou Sarrow in that oftentimes they are not expressed in words. And... I'd also like to bring to the court's attention something in my final brief that the law's role of a common law relationship and the status of remarriage favored if acquired, even if acquired with common law informality. That's in Ray Peterson's estate. The law allows a spouse and a generous amount of reasons to establish by divorce that the marriage was a mistake. It should be equally eager to let both spouses discover that their divorce was also a mistake. And in the process of the 4 days of hearing conducted over several months, it would be that there would be a finding that there was a marriage. And once the court had all the evidence before it.
Is there any holding or fact-finding in Lucero that one party did not want to consent to be married? It strikes me that that's the potential distinction with Lucero, but I'd like you to address that.
I believe there was a holding that one party did not. In any event, Smith v. People, I've lost my place, I'm sorry, Smith v. People Court points out that all the indicia are not necessarily, a final word, and we come now to the indication that we have. Once we get to the point that the court did find a marriage, then the finding of award of attorney's fees is brought to the forefront. Then we come to the question of when was the common law marriage entered into, and since the facts indicate that the parties resumed their relationship almost immediately after the statutory marriage was decree was entered in 1992, we contend that they behaved as husband and wife, their reputation in the community was as husband and wife, and that they had no basis for denying the marriage. And with that, I think I'm out of breath, and so I'll quit.
Thank you.
If I may briefly just address two issues. Two things that opposing counsel indicated I want to address is he continues to refer to there's no agreement in words, which is what Lucero says, and he's mentioned the Smith case, which also says there were no direct words between the parties whether they're going to become husband and wife. And I do believe the distinction in this case, and to submit to the distinction in the case, is the fact that Judge Nichols clearly found in this case that there was no consent and would have been no consent by Mr. Locklear, and leave the contract arguments I've already indicated. And the Peterson case, which is the other case that he mentioned, just want to briefly, that was, again, a remarriage. And that logic was specifically rejected by the trial court. I know it's not binding on you, but the trial court specifically said, well, I know that these remarriage situations are a little bit different, but I don't believe in today's world that that's as significant as it may have been when the Peterson case was decided. So she did look at that issue and rejected that as a factor. And in this case, the parties have been formally married, formally got divorced in 1992, and what the judge found from the date of the remarriage was that they began living together in 2002, which is consistent with Lucero and Taylor in those cases, which requires cohabitation as a second element in addition to the consent. But again, it's our position, you don't get to that issue without the consent. Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.
Thank you.